Hello everyone and welcome, or maybe welcome back, to What Would the Smart Party Do, the UK's premier RPG podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Gaz, and with me, as usual, from his sunshine den down south, is my girlfriend Ben.
You've got visuals on this, haven't you? It's springtime! Spring is in the air. I literally see daffodils from my window. How's that?
Lovely, isn't it? I've got little purple flowers, I don't know what they are, but it makes me feel happy to be at this part of the year, doesn't it?
I'm very, very happy to not have to put heating on. As a dad.
As the bill player.
I've been turning that thermostat down for 6 months. I've got Kickstarters to buy.
Those miniatures aren't going to buy themselves.
No, they're not. I can always burn them if I get really cold.
Yeah. They're not going to paint themselves either, but that's a different story. So what are we going to talk about today? We've been watching all kinds of like film and media and considering what goes into making characters, actually, because it can be one of the difficult things when you start a new game, thinking, what is my character? And in a game like D&D, perhaps it's a bit easy to go, I'll be the tank or the cleric or some of the like stock phrases like that. But possibly what we want to delve into a little bit more here is, in your tabletop role-playing games, how do you put more character in your character? And I guess there's a bit of a balance to be struck, because you don't want to be giving a full 5-page backstory with details of their entire life story and nuances to the personality, because that's not all going to come out of the table. So you're going to have to give it enough that you have actually got some flavour, but not too much that people ignore it or you ignore it yourself, because it just doesn't come out of the game, I guess.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, some of your favourite characters in history might be the ones that actually developed over time in play, which is ideal, because you're really only looking for a starting point, aren't you?
That's right,
session zero stuff. What actually your character becomes known for and how your character relates to everything in the game and outside the game is going to be because of the actions they take in the game. Mm-hmm. So you're right. I mean, backstory is fine, but it will always be backstory. It has to be, unless you're playing some kind of flashbacky time travel thing. So I think a strong concept is obviously a great thing to have. And I think that archetypes can really help you with that. So I agree with you that you can't just go, or you shouldn't perhaps maybe just go, I'll be the rogue or the wizard. It is at least a starting point. You've got something to go on, but you need to build from there. And so I think strong central concept and a drive and off you go. But that's easy to say. Where'd you get them from? Where do you get them from, Gaz?
All over the place. I'm reminded actually of, there's a good friend I've not managed to play with for ages because we've just not hit the same conventions and he lives in the part of the country, but I'll give Steve Hanlon a shout out because he's a really good role player. Love him having him at my table as a player, and he can pick out a thing from a character sheet and make that thing. So my example would be running my tight purse hobby games that I do, which is like cut rate pirates basically, and he was playing Old Pete, who's kind of like the old garrulous first mate who's always survived somehow and all the rest of it. So you've got a bit of a hook with him. But he became a whole new character because he just saw the one item that was unique on the back of his character sheet, which is a double-headed coin. So he got a crown or whatever with two heads on. And it very quickly became, every time we decided what to do, I'll tell you what, lads, we'll flip for it. Heads will do what I want. Tails will go with the captain. All right, it's heads again, lads. What are the chances? And it just every time, like whatever it was, talking to NPCs, bargaining with people, this coin kept coming out, and he just suddenly developed this character about how he was just this wily old goat who was always getting his own way, but seemingly entirely fair, and the creator loved him and thought he was a good old sort and that kind of thing. So, like, just looking at your character sheet if you're at a convention and got a new game, just having something on it, a little thing, a piece of equipment, a trademark weapon, or something like that we can think about, well, where did that come from? How did I get it? Why do I call it this thing? Just have a thing, an item, a physical thing in the game. That can immediately inform your character.
Yeah, I think it's an overlooked thing with personality generating in games. Most games these days will hold your hand through, like, what sort of character you're going to be. And they will say things like, you know, you can be brave or curious, but a physical possession can be as much your character as anything else can, whether it be a tattoo or an item of dress or a quirk. Mm. And those little quirks can soon turn into campaign framing memories, which is lovely. I mean, I'm reminded there that when you were talking about that character, you said he was a wily old goat. Do you know what? That's a pretty strong concept for a character, wily old goat. You got that next to your name on your character sheet? You've got enough, haven't you?
Yes.
And if ever you're in doubt as to what to say or what to do or how to react, look down, wily old goat. Well, I'll do something wily old goatish then. And before too long, well, I think what the end state is, you want other people to know what kind of what you would do or how you would be, even if you weren't there.
Yeah.
So, like, oh, if Steve was here, he'd be flipping that coin, wouldn't he? Yeah. That's nice. That's when you've built a bit of a legacy for your character. So, you know, stuff like Wily Old Goat really works for me. That kind of Numenera does this, and I'm sure Monty Cook's other games do this too. Where part of character generation is you have an adjective, noun, that verbs.
Yes.
That's essentially your character. And that is not a bad place to go, because you're a thesaurus away from having some really good combinations.
Mm.
And that'll get you going.
Yeah, of course. And like a good thing that a lot of games have are advantages and disadvantages, edges and flaws, whatever they might be. And it can be tempting when you make a character, especially for a longer campaign, that you pick the flaws that don't actually have that much of an impact, but get you some points so you can spend it on an extra dot of strength or whatever it is. I'm reminded, Riley, of Slay Industries, where everybody's character was sterile. How the world of darkness was ever, where the progress was ever going to have any children again, I don't know, because no one was able to father or mother them. But it was free 10 points, basically. So, but those kind of like lists are better places where you can find something that's interesting. And you're very good at it. Like, you pick enemy because you want that to be in the game.
Yeah.
So you want to have an enemy, and you can immediately build stuff around that then. And I don't know, think of a character like McNulty in The Wire. He's an excellent police detective, but his personal life's a disaster.
Mm.
And there's all this other stuff. But he's such an interesting and engaging character because of that. Because you want to root for him, and he's doing cool stuff, and he's finding these murderers, and he's a good detective. But then half of the time you're just thinking, can you not? Why are you like that? Why are you ruining this woman's life? What's wrong with you? So I think it's another good place to look is that the edges and flaws, but also having that shade and dark. So everybody wants their character to be a hero, or to be good, or to be, you know, able and all that kind of stuff. Definitely, we do. But it makes them a lot more interesting. They've also got something that's like, what's the weakness? What's their little bit of kryptonite? What can we bring in every time that shows them in the not the most positive light? Because none of us are perfect.
No, I think this one takes a bit of finessing, actually. I'm not very good at this bit, because whenever you start looking for like maybe the more a bit of light and shade in your character, I think if you're not too careful, you can make your character really unsympathetic. Mm. And you've got to be sympathetic to your character. It doesn't mean you have to be a paladin, but you do have to have some sympathy, because for a start, you're going to be inhabiting it a lot yourself. And I've got tired of my own characters in the past, very tired. And then I suddenly become aware, well, how must the other guys be feeling? If I've started to get bored with myself, the other guys must have wanted to throw me out a window weeks ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you give yourself like I mean, you can give yourself all kinds of like what would be perceived as negative traits, but even if you just pick like loner, that's something that is maybe works in a Batman comic. But in a role-playing game, when you've got some team dynamics going on, you're kind of painting out a little bit of the world that you can never... You're putting up some borders is a better metaphor. You're putting up some fences.
Yeah.
To the rest of the game and to people accessing you. And, you know, I think that you need a deep, rounded character, which will come with time, but you need a central concept at the start that isn't going to push you into directions where you have to end up not being able to access the fun.
Yes. No, that's perfectly valid. Thanks for clarifying. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think I was sort of leaning towards that thing where I mentioned, like, you have an enemy. It's like you want a flaw that gives you some shade, but then that also informs the game, and it's something interesting that happens. Not, yeah, like you said, that's just, it's depressing every time sometimes someone picks the sniper. What do you do? Oh, I hide in the shadows and not do anything until I take that one perfect shot. So that's not a great roleplay experience for anyone else at the table. And probably not for you, to be honest, because you're spending a lot of time taking the action of aiming or hiding and not actually engaging with what's going on.
So to pick up a thread that you dropped about McNulty from The Wire, he was saying there that his professional life was pretty good and successful by many metrics, but his personal life was like the mirror of that.
Yeah.
So personal life for PCs in gaming, often a fairly fruitful place that can often get sort of swept away.
Mm.
I was going to ask you about your experience with Delta Green, because I think that they have a bonds thing, don't they, where stuff happens to your family. And I haven't really experienced that much in Delta Green games. I'm normally just like running, screaming, or emptying my mag into something horrendous. So have you got any sort of detail on how that works, mate?
Yeah, and it works if you put the effort in, like most things in games, but you'll have bonds like children, spouses, a sponsor from AA, whatever it might be. And during the game, when you take hits to your sanity, you can instead try to take it on the bond. And you can, this thing's like a D4 points potentially. So the bonds take hits rather than your sanity. And that transpires by, you have normally seen at the beginning and end of a session of your bond. So you've got about to go on the mission and speaking to your wife, for example. And at the end of the mission, when you come back and speak to her, and if you've taken a big hit on the bond, then you need to demonstrate to everyone like how your relationship has broken down slightly due to the horrible things you've seen or done on the mission. And over time, obviously, all your bonds are going to start degrading. So your relationships with other people have to take a back seat to what's happening, and your sanity is also coming down. So it's a kind of way of informing that. How would your life fall apart if you're fighting the mythos? And, bit by bit, you just can't be nice to your family and your friends anymore. You're going to have to, they haven't seen what you've seen and all that kind of stuff. So it's a nice mechanical way of slowly doing it. But you have to kind of enforce that let's have some home scenes bit to demonstrate it. Otherwise, it just feels like it's a spare heat sink for sanity that you can use.
Yeah, I like the idea though. I mean, any sort of system where mechanically they prop up what it is you're trying to do around the table, that's a nice thing. That reminds me of a very old system, PDQ, pretty damn quick system.
Right.
It's used in Truth and Justice and a few other things as well. Worth looking at, because that was the first thing that introduced me to that idea, and it comes from Fate as well, when Fate was kind of a brand new thing. So in a Supers game, you could literally be the kind of Spider-Man dude. And when you took damage in that game, you could take damage to your relationship with your girlfriend.
Yeah.
The Green Goblin could smack you in the face, and then all of a sudden, you didn't get your dissertation in on time.
Yeah.
and obviously, there was a little bit of cognitive dissonance with some of them, but it's quite nice to be affected in that way. And you see that even now in really modern games like The Wild Sea. You don't really have hit points in that game. You take damage to to stuff that matters to you, which could include your knees, don't get me wrong. They might matter to you, but it could be, your relationships, it could be your home, it could be your situation with just like water.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool, because that builds into character, because you want to, when I was talking before about sympathetic characters, you want to care about your character. If you don't care about your character, nobody else will. So obviously you want to make a character that people care about, that the game cares about. And then that way you could be messed up by circumstances and then you care about it. Because if you are playing fighter called Bob and you've got 8 hit points and you lose 4 of them, do you really care? You only care when it's not just fighter called Bob and everybody else is like invested in you and you're invested in them and you've got some connections to the campaign world, to the other players, to the GM, to just what's going on. If you don't care, you don't have a character. So you've got to build something precious and fragile and in equal measure, because if you don't ever get hurt, nothing happens. And if you don't care about it in the first place, you don't care whether it gets hurt.
Yeah. Yes, entirely. It's one of the sort of quandaries I have about Spire.
Mm.
A great game in many ways. You're like dark elf freedom fighters, you call yourselves, and the high elves in this tower are the government and see you as terrorists. So it depends on which bit of the tower, how far up the tower you are, where you're sat, as to which role you view the dark elves have. But you're the
Taylor's oldest time.
Yeah. But that's a thing with like sort of, I can't remember the exact terminology, but you kind of get stressed and at some point something might get hit and it'll be something
fall
like...
out.
Yeah, could be. And your weapon cache has been discovered.
Mm.
But until that happens, you didn't know you had a weapon cache to be discovered, and now you've got to act like you care that it's gone. And I get how the system works, but I don't think it builds that investment that you were talking about. You just have to assume you're invested in whatever happens from the fallout, which I don't think works as well. Still a great game. Still recommend you all look at it and look at Heart and all the other games that the guys have produced. But that doesn't work for me. Doesn't mean it doesn't work for other people. But yeah, you're right. You've got to have some sort of investment. I'm trying to think. I was trying to get some guys at one of the Sunday Isles games around to sort of describe their pets, because you have a little card with some dots on for your creatures in Iron Sworn type games, and you can actually take damage on them, and they become less effective because you roll, or you get as much, many adds as they have dots, and if you damage them, then they're not as effective at helping you, funnily enough. And most of them are quite good, and then you care about it, and if you've got a crystalline sprite that crawls and changes colours with your mood and does this, that, and the other, and then someone tries to shoot it, or you choose to put damage on it from something that's happened or consequences, then you feel it a little bit more. And other people go, oh, no, not a sprite. But I have had a player who like just wouldn't describe his jungle cat at all. And it's like, well, what's, you know, what's like, well, he's kind of camouflaged. He's what now? He's like, has he got some kind of tarpaulin on him? Is he skinning that? Yeah, but he's still, you must have a relationship. And this cat follows you around and will fight for the death for you. Like, wouldn't tell us about him. And as a result, that cool feature that could have come out of the table didn't really.
Mm-hmm.
And he just felt a shame. I mean, maybe other players didn't notice because they didn't know he had one. I forgot he did because he never mentioned it again.
Well, it's camouflaged.
Yeah. But for me, like, why wouldn't you bring that in? Why, there must be a story there. How have you got this animal? Why is it so loyal to you? Like, what, you know, what, where did you get it from? What's there's so many story ideas there that I think, like, how would you? What's wrong with players? I think this is a different podcast I'm turning into. We need to move me on before I start into a rant about what's wrong with people.
That's the podcast we maintain on the dark web. Episode 666 next week. Well, yeah, what is wrong with players? What is wrong with players that choose to play in a vanilla D&D game? They choose to play a ranger with a wolf, and then you ask them about the wolf, and they look at you like, oh my god, I can't believe you asked me that. This is too hard.
Yeah.
Well, you pick the wolf, mate.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to join in here.
Yeah, exactly. I guess another aspect then, talking of companions as such, is the dynamics. So The Wire, if people haven't seen it, is quite an old TV show now, but it is the gold standard in television, so I should definitely look it up. One of the good things about it is that it has an ensemble cast, so it's kind of a... The initial series, anyway, is a story of the police trying to catch a drug gang. The drug dealer's just been in this miserable estate and just making the money how they can. The game's the game. And it's the relationship between the two. But in the amongst the criminals and amongst the police, they've all got their own dynamics as well, and nothing's ever easy. And all the characters are different. And there's some characters that pull in and say, well, why aren't you trying hard, and why aren't you doing this? And there's other characters trying to throw themselves down the stairs so they get a medical sign-off and can go to retirement without having to do anything else and all that kind of stuff. And they've all got a personality flaw. They've all got something they're good at. Or, well, some of them haven't got anything they're good at and they've just got personality flaws. But that's a different thing. Don't play those characters, possibly, but... It's worth thinking about your team dynamic as well. So if you're having a session zero, you're chatting to the people around the table before you start your convention game, like, just get a read on what the people have got. So if someone else is I'm the bold, brash one who doesn't take any shit or whatever, it's like, cool, let them have that. Like, that's their thing. So you think of a different shtick for you. Maybe you're the subtle, quiet one who goes in afterwards and speaks to people on the slide going, oh, I'm terribly sorry about the paladin, but, you know, while I'm here, here, let me pour you some brandy, let's have a chat, that kind of thing. Or maybe you're the taciturn one who doesn't speak much, but you're always describing how you leap into action whenever there's an action scene or something like that. So it helps to work together to all kind of like carve out a little niche so you know that in certain situations you've all got your thing where you do that thing.
Yeah, that could take a bit of time. I found with online gaming that could be quite tricky. I find it. Because if you're doing your session zero or your character generation or even your session one, to be honest... Personally, I've got so much going on. My bandwidth is taken up by my own character and figuring out how it works, and, you know, how many points have I got in survival and how does that work. And often you've got like this quite a complex character sheet which doesn't really show you what you want till you press a sequence of buttons in the right order. You're doing all that and you've got an ear on what the GM's saying as well. And she's saying, like, you know, the planet city of the city planet of whatever. And you're going, yeah. And you're still trying to figure out like how you can put a dagger in your other hand.
Yeah.
and so you're losing a bit of fidelity. And the first thing that goes for me is when I'm, you know, when I'm kind of like trying to narrow my bandwidth, is the other characters. They're the first thing that I forget about.
Mm.
And that's a bit rotten, really, but sometimes you can have your head down on session zero thinking about everything else, and then your GM will say, what relationships you got to the others? You go, I don't know what they've got. I don't know who they are. Or they don't know who I am, because they're doing the same thing. So you would be hard-pressed to get everything going in 5 minutes. Imagine you go to a wedding and there's eight of you at a table and none of you have ever met before and you're all wearing masks. well, apart from anything else, that's a weird film. But you'd be hard-pressed to, like, figure out your dynamic, let alone go and hunt down monsters together within the first 5 minutes. And that can be what it's like unless you really take the time to open your ears, which I should do more of, and listen to what other people are doing, react to that, ask them a couple of questions, and just get to know each other before you're fighting some world-ending peril and, and being demanded that you care about leaving someone behind.
Yes. Well, there's a trick that's used in... Well, it's not a trick, it's part of the rule set if you look at a lot of the Free League games. And you could, but you could use that as a trick in something else that doesn't have it. And that's that when you make a character, there'll be three things at the bottom of each archetype. And it's like, someone betrayed you, who was it? Someone's your best friend in the world, but they don't think so, who is it? Loads of questions like that, and each character's got different ones. So if you can have a couple of those on each character sheet, even whatever game it is, D&D, whatever, and just say, someone saved your life, who was it?
Yeah.
And you can all go around and just sort those out at the start. It's not going to give you the deep connections you get over playing 30 sessions in a campaign, but at least you've then got like an in.
Yeah.
You know that guy saved your life and you owe him. So like when he's actually surrounded by kobolds and all the rest of it, you're wondering what to do. Like it gives you the opportunity to say, well, you know, I'm not leaving Skendar the Ranger behind. He saved me that time, so I'm coming over here to help him. I'm going to attack these kobolds or whatever it is that you're doing. So you just, like you say a lot of the time, you just want, you got a bold hook, don't you? You want the big button to press. It doesn't need to be too nuanced or subtle or whatever. Just like do the thing. Pick a thing and do the thing and show it to people.
Yeah, I think keeping it clean and relatively simple is not a bad thing at all. I think people overrate subtlety in role-playing games. I think big, broad brushstrokes, primary colours is often the way to start because you could get nuanced later on. But you need to know what you're doing straight away. And I think keeping that kind of really pithy, this is who I am, lets people make decisions about who you are, especially if you're trying to interact with other players as well. So if I have got on my sheet that I was betrayed by someone in the past, and I love those bonds, same as you guys, I think they're brilliant things to have. If I look around the table, I want to be able to see what I've got, what my options are. And I kind of think that perhaps, although I've just said bold brushstrokes are really good, what I do want to avoid is where people refer to themselves as the. So if I'm the tank, I'm, you know, the clever one. I think we could get a little bit deeper than that. Sure. But no, it doesn't have to be much deeper. So, you know, we started off this conversation talking about where do you get your character ideas from. So if the system isn't giving me character ideas, I tend to go to quite classic archetypes, really. And I'm sure we all do and file the serial numbers off. But, you know, Han Solo is probably 80% of my characters, realistically. But that's okay. And you can even say that, can't you?
Yeah.
There'd be nothing wrong with saying that, especially if you're playing Star Wars. There'd be literally nothing wrong with saying that. But you could be a rogue in water deep, and you could be a Han Solo. That's fine. And the other 80% of my characters, which now makes 160%, I am aware of that, is Black Widow from Marvel, because that's the kind of character I like.
I'm glad you said that, because I was going to challenge you on 80% Han Solo and say, where's the 80% left in Black Widow?
It's 20% Han Solo, isn't it? Really? Well, maybe not even that. It's 99% Black Widow. but very rarely is this person female, Russian, red-headed, and an agent for S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
But it's just got, you know, because that's not the person, that's not the character. Those are the trappings of the character.
Yeah.
So, you know... But I tend to do that with all kinds of things. And I like to smuggle things into games just for my own amusement sometimes. So, you know, if I'm like, if my character in some kind of modern day setting is a millionaire arms dealer who's got alcohol problems, well, that's Tony Stark. And that's something to start going on, you know. And I do that with lots of the sort of Stan Lee characters of the 1960s, like, you know, pick an X-Man if you need to, because they've always got excellent personal problems. Spider-Man is a fantastic character to go with. And I'm not talking about playing supers, I'm talking about playing Ironsworn or Traveller or whatever. You port those elements. Peter Parker is a fantastic character. The fact he dresses up as Spider-Man is kind of cool, and there's people who have written whole novels about that. But in that first issue of Spider-Man, he's just a troubled teenager who makes the wrong decisions, and he ends up with his family mentor and his Uncle Ben and his parents and just stuff. And he's trying to get through college at the same time and then make a living as a photographer And these are all the great things about Spider-Man. It's not necessarily his rogues gallery of stuff that happens later, because that happens in the game. But if you didn't have that foundational great character underneath it, no one would care about a dude who can't even see his facial features.
Mm.
No one would care. You know, if it was just Spider-Man and not Peter Parker, no one would give a rat's ass. And the Peter Parker elements can be transported into Call of Cthulhu. They can be transported into any game that you want. And I do that all the time. That works for me anyway.
Yeah, no, that's really good. It's a really good point. Well worth thinking about. Yeah, we're doing a lot of caveat in this show, but there's reasons for that. Bad experiences. So, yeah, I've mentioned one of the things that I know our good friend Guy Milner off Unconventional Gems and the Burn After Running blog, he does as well for things like Feng Shui, is when you start, you say what actor it is or what character from a film is playing your character.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a Wing Chun monk from the mountains, but I'd had him played by Jason Statham because it seemed like that's in the 80s, that's the sort of thing that would happen. Like, it'd be whitewashing now, but it just like the juxtaposition appealed to him. But everybody knew what sort of character it was. Like, yeah, you could put that image in your head. The caveat I want to make is you don't have to keep telling people that. Like, you don't have to keep trying to put on a Mockney accent or, you know, point out that you've got a boiled leg all the time. Like, you put the idea in people's heads and then you play to the type that you want to be. So I guess one of the things I'm trying to say is that you don't have to keep breaking the fourth wall all the time or reminding people of it by explicitly saying, remember, I'm Han Solo or whatever it is. Just do the things that the character would do. You've already set up the image in people's heads. Now just follow the tropes and press, you know, follow the beats.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's a starting point. It's not the journey. So absolutely, mate. Yeah, completely. And you've reminded me. I wanted to ask you about this. Where do you stand on accents as a player? Now, as a GM, you end up doing accents all the time. I mean, I have a vast repertoire of at least two accents that I can manage. So, but as a player, I always feel for our mate Rich August. He always has an accent for his players. Always has an accent. And I kind of feel for him, because I think if this turns into a campaign, you're going to regret this in 6 months.
Yeah, well, I do admire your Bangladeshi and your Welsh. I think they're both
They often blend, as it turns out.
Yeah, it's an odd one with players. Because I think, like you say, as well, sometimes, especially at convention games, a person will start off with one and they themselves realise quite soon this is not how they want to talk for 4 hours, but they've kindly committed.
It's a bit rough, isn't it?
Yeah, you can put a bit of accent as a player if you want to, but like you say, you just got to know that you're committing to that. That's a long old stretch to be doing it, and is it actually adding? Is the other thing. Because I think people think it might do, and then it's like, well, that's A, not a very good accent, and B, you carry on doing it even when you're talking out of character, so it's just annoying now, so stop doing that as well, and that kind of thing. So yeah, I don't know. If you're good at it, like you say, Rich August is very good at just coming up with an accent and sticking with it, and he'll stay method. He'll be in the role forever. So that's cool.
I don't think I've ever heard his real voice.
Yeah, but if you're going to do it, be confident, and you've got to commit to it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or very quickly say, do you know what, that's rubbish. And I've had that, and that's perfectly fine. I've been at plenty of convention games where someone started off trying to be vaguely French or whatever, and then within 5 minutes it's gone, this is just rubbish, isn't it? Everybody's gone, yes, it is. And they go, okay, cool, yeah, I'll stop. When we all go, okay, thank you for stopping.
Yeah,
and then we have a perfectly nice game afterwards.
I've got a blast from the past for you here, guys. You'll be able to see this. So this is like my current bedside reading. I don't know why. This is 7C, everybody. So
first edition.
First edition 7C, the only edition, really. And from the 90s. I picked that up because I was looking at something else and then just fell off the shelf. I was just reminded of accents because of that. Because in 7C, if you don't know, it's a kind of a pseudo-European setting of the 17th century. And you've got like your analogue for Spain and Italy and France and Britain. And it all becomes very allo quite quickly. So the idea of speaking Castilian means you start speaking like Manuel from Fawlty Towers. And it can get a little bit... Yeah, so careful with your accents, because they're not a replacement for a personality.
They are not, no. I mean, I use them... The place I'm going to use them the most is Pendragon, because as a GM, every knight's got a squire, basically, and as you say, like most people have enough going on trying to give their knight some personality without trying to worry about what their squire is like as well, so it's kind of false to me. So I just give them an accent so that we can differentiate so we know who they are, because they're all basically a generic 15-year-old lord's son who's cleans armour every evening. So how are they different? Well, give them a bit of an accent so that then a bit of a personality comes out. You can give them one of like a bit of a more slow northern accent, which makes them sound a bit more dopey. You know, all kinds of things here. The favourite one I've got, which the Germans love, is my Scouse accent, because I've done an extra character and needed an extra one. So I just got a really whiny, "Oh, why have I got to clean your armour? Look at you on that horse, you're too fat. Poor horse." At which it will surprise no one to know that my European players have no idea what I'm saying, and some of the English ones as well. But they all find it absolutely hilarious. So I've just gotten the winner there just by using the accent. The actual words are meaningless, but yeah, there's no way I would commit to that as a player for, like, you know, 4 hours. Like, just no, that'd be no good. So yeah, accents, be careful, I think I've got to say.
unless caveat time, unless it's your natural accent. We welcome people from all regions of the UK and far beyond our tables. Even Geordie.
Yeah, well,
in a way, with the northern make some dopey comment. Well, you can get away with it with me.
Yeah, I can, because I'm yeah. I'm northern, so I can. Speak, it's my experience. People. I can speak for my people.
My tribe.
You can't say it, but I can say it.
No, that's right. Yeah, it's racist when I do it. Okay, so great. Bringing this back on track. Great characters. Right, so. So where's your go-to there, guys? You've got yourself a nice blank character sheet, and let's say the game that you have signed up for doesn't give you a huge amount of assistance about what your character's going to be. Maybe it's one of those sort of skilly games where there's plenty of things that shows you what you can do, but it doesn't really give you much on who you are. So what do? Do you look at your Netflix queue? Do you look to books? Do you go to your memory? Where do you go to get those sparks?
Yeah, exactly. All that stuff. So a lot of books, a lot of TV, a lot of films. And you know, I mentioned it before, I think you can look at flawed characters. Like that just gives you a second string to your bow. And it's a bit like, if you've got the advice for Vason, for example, for making an adventure, you have a primary plot with what's happening on with the creature, whatever it is, and then you have a secondary plot, which might be the mayor's wife sleeping with a priest, or whatever it is. So I like to have some kind of flaws, like the secondary bit, to give you some underplay as well. And you could look at like Slow Horses, is quite popular recently, a sort of like spy series, which is books and now TV series. But someone like Gary Oldman as Jackson Lamb is great, because he's a good detective or investigator and agent and handler, but he's also like completely dishevelled and just eats kebabs and has got stained overcoat and stuff like that. So something like that can immediately, you know, transport it into Waterdeep or something, and it's fine. Yeah, I'm a commander type character, whatever, but you know, my arm is a bit mildewy and I've got, you know, curry stains down the front of my breastplate and things like that. You can just immediately start to add little bits which add things. And looking at things that I've got ensemble, like The Wire, or if you look at Seven Samurai, for example, that classic old one, or if you want The Magnificent Seven, but you've immediately got like a bunch of different characters, seven in fact, you've all got a different personality and archetype, so you can pick like which one of them am I. You can look at that's one way of doing it. Like I said, the anti-heroes are a good one as well. So Joe Abercrombie's book, if you look at something like Logan Nine Fingers, The Bloody Nine, he's got a strong character and you kind of want to be on his side. You don't understand why you're not at first until he starts doing some bad stuff, and then you're like, okay, no. It's like, you're deeply flawed. But yeah, definitely, like, read widely. This is some of the advice that Pelgrane have put out recently. They did a little 3-minute video by Gareth Ryder Hanrahan, as we all know, he's a prolific and excellent writer. And what he suggests on there, spoilers, is he reads a lot voraciously and he slams things together. So he picks up two different books and on the video literally slaps them together with a crash and says, there's your idea. Well, you could do that with characters as well. So you could take your, I want to be Han Solo, but I also want to be a bit Toshiro Mifune in Seven Samurai and go on rants occasionally. So, you know, I might seem like the cool, suave smuggler, but every now and again I'm going to explode and I'm going to kick off about stuff unnecessarily, that sort of thing. So yeah, like, pick other characters and use the whole cloth, or a good way of making them your own is just to pick two characters and smush them together.
Yeah, do that a lot. Gareth Ryder Hanrahan does it all for you, of course. You just read his books and steal his characters, because that's where I get my stuff from. I mean, if I get really invested in a book, and I don't read enough, I don't have the time, but if I get really invested in a book, and Gareth Hanrahan's Black Iron Gods is one I would heartily recommend, you get to know those characters really, really well, and you can't help but want to play them afterwards, even if you've been set, your next game around the corner is maybe Cyberpunk, which is not the same genre at all, but you kind of want to play Carrie, the thief who lives on the edge of her wits all the time. She's such a lovely character. Why wouldn't you do that? And of course, you can do that. You just read about noodle bars instead of taverns. It's not that hard. Some stuff that I've kind of ported recently. I've gone through a little stage of reading kind of wholesome books, which are all about like cafes and books and being comfy.
You got to that stage in your life now.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a character in a recent book who was working in a coffee shop in a fantasy city. I need to get a life. But I took about two or three elements from her and ported them into Matt's Dungeons of Drakenheim game. And my character is called Tandri. And if you happen to have read the book that's got a character called Tandri in it, you will know who Tandri is. But my character doesn't look like Tandri. Doesn't even act like Tandri, really. But in my head, I've got that kind of slightly vague watercolour template that sits underneath the sketch I've made on top of it. And that character's become its own thing over the course of a couple of sessions. And you might not even be able to see the antecedent now, but it's there for me. And my job, and this is where things get a bit more tricky, my job is to make sure that the other people around the table can see and hear and feel my character, not just inside my head behind my eyes. Hmm. Which might be another podcast, and I think we've probably done a few podcasts on that. But that's where I go to. And I often take a sort of a bleed that lasts for quite a long time from something that sort of struck me, something that stayed with me a lot. And if not, then if I want that kind of quick sugar rush of inspiration, I'll watch something that is, by any standard, is not good. I'll watch Rebel Moon, and I'll take characters from that, because that stuff isn't going to work as a big movie or as a series of movies, because it's just not good enough. It's more than good enough for an RPG to take a character with those kind of five or six words, and that's all they've got, because then you make it good after that. So taking quite basic tropes, really, and just spinning them up and taking them out for a ride and see what develops.
Yeah, I'm reminded of something like Guardians of the Galaxy, and you've got Rocket, who's a little raccoon, but it's like well into his guns and bombs and stuff. And I saw, I don't know how I managed to get served up with this on YouTube or whatever, I ended up watching it, but it was a trailer for, I think, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 or 3, but it was in German. And immediately, I had a new character. It's like, oh, yeah. Like when he's talking about bombers rather than grenades or something. And just the way he's speaking, it's like, why isn't the whole of Guardians of the Galaxy half of this man as German? Like, this raccoon should be German, for God's sake. But that's straight away a character appeared in my head that was slightly different than the one on the screen.
Yeah.
But it's about having quirks in it and bringing them out. So it's things like, if you have got the Lorna Sniper or whatever, you need to include yourself in the game anyway, but you can just add a little bit. So when you're setting off in the morning and you're going, okay, well, you're going to go off the mission, everybody just accepts it and goes on. To make your character known, you can just add a one-liner at stages like that and go, right, I'll finish reassembling my rifle and stick it in its case. Done. That's it. Drop that in there. And someone else is doing their other thing as they close their laptop down, having installed a new whatever, hackerware or something. You can all just drop little bits every time just to let people know. Because the one that people can do, and seems to come a lot, is if your character smokes or drinks, then you hear about that constantly non-stop. Anytime there's any pause or break or interaction, someone says they take out a cigarette and light it, or they drop it on the ground and ground it under the boot. So if you can do that for a cigarette, you can do that with a rifle or a sword or a magic orb or your special hat, or whatever it is that you've got. Like, you can reveal your character through little quirk that you do every time, and you don't have to go on for 5 minutes on a monologue. You can just put the signal out again to go, look, I've got this thing, remember? This is me, remember? This demonstrates my character. The big strong guy cracks his knuckles, or, puts his head one way or the other before he starts to talk or head off somewhere. Yeah. Just add your little bits and just keep signalling to remind everybody.
Yeah, you can build a character out of quirks. If I hit you with a couple of quirks here, guys, you've got to play name that character. This won't be hard, believe you me. Walther PPK. Dry martini, shaken, not stirred.
I was already saying James Bond before you got to the second one.
Doesn't take long, does it?
No.
Does not take long. And I mean, that's maybe not the greatest character ever made, but it's certainly suitable for role-playing games. And I don't mean that role-playing games are, like, not as good as other media. I'm not trying to say, like, you know, we could just scrape off the stuff from the bottom of the filmmaker's barrel and it'll have to do in our only ghetto. Not at all. We do different things with our characters. And I think we need actionable material. We need stuff that's a bit more obvious, perhaps, than, you know, the subtleties that you might find in a long, slow-burn detective novel or so, a series like True Detective. Great characters in there, but they would act differently in games. So I don't think there's anything wrong at all. As you say, mate, if I had a sniper, I'd want my rifle to have a name. And many games will encourage you to do that. So, you know, when you're unpacking Susie and putting her back into your velvet-lined case, that's another level, isn't it? And it's not a complicated level. It doesn't. I don't think it should be complicated. I don't even think it should be clever. I don't even think it should be sophisticated. I think it just should be there.
Yeah.
You know? And then let's play with those bits of Lego you've just introduced to the game.
And there's definitely... I mention it a lot, but it's worth keep repeating, like playing up, doing things for other people. So if you were doing that at times throughout the game, I imagine my character would be saying, when there's something dangerous happening, you're going to need to get Susie out of the case or something.
Susie's sleeping.
Yeah. Trying to get old Susie out of the bag. You can reciprocate and reintroduce and reincorporate, and you can just call out each other's things to remind people of what each character's about. You know, but like amplify things that other people put out there so that it just gets more airtime and you understand it. And you just build each other's characters up that way.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, before too long, it'll probably get a bit meta, whatever. You remember Ocean's 11, the modern one, Steven Soderbergh film?
Mm-hmm.
Brad Pitt's character is, I don't, rusty. He's never without something in his mouth. He's carrying a cup of coffee or some juice, or he's eating a banana or whatever. He's constantly snacking. And you look at Brad Pitt's body and think, you're really not. Because I've tried that particular diet and I do not look anything like Brad Pitt.
I've got the same results.
But that's a characterisation. And it's there. He's called Rusty and he drinks a lot of Frappuccinos. And yeah. Arguably there's nothing else to him in those movies. But it's enough. It's enough. Now, that you've got Brad Pitt acting, and he's quite good at it, and I get that. He's been given a really good script with pithy lines, but that all happens afterwards, doesn't it? But in the script, it's just, here's this guy, he wears, like, big collared shirts, and he's always drinking from a cup or something called Rusty. There probably was nothing else about his character in there. Nothing at all. But it was a really good launch pad. All right, see, he's an Oscar-winning actor, and I'm not. But I could probably get started with that. And that's all you need to do. Which I think that one of the traps is, and you alluded to this right at the start, guys, 6 pages of backstory that won't come out in play, that's busy work. That's not going to get you anywhere. Do it if you like, by all means.
Yeah.
But it won't matter. It won't matter to anybody else but you. And if that's you, that's fine. But, you know, you need something actionable to bring to the table. And I think it can be quite simple. I think having someone with blue hair, it's not a replacement for a personality, but it's at least something to go with. Something that, you know, recognisable about you. Because when the game starts, you're going to be like those bits in books where the main character, who's probably speaking to you in the first person, after about 3 chapters, you've got no idea what they're like. And then they go and have a shave, don't they, so that the author can say what they look like in the mirror as the character inspects themselves.
Right.
But in an RPG, you need to get that out quite quickly, don't you? Because someone's going to go, what do you look like? Kind of average, tall average.
Yeah, forgettable face.
Jeans, black coat.
Just normal, really. Yeah, I had that with I think it was Rivers of London, and there's a bit about a third of the way through the book, and I realised, he's a person of colour.
Yeah.
There'd be no indication at any point. But because I'm a white dude, I'd just immediately gone, well, you give me nothing, so I'm going to put my canvas on.
Yes.
Or my paint on that canvas, sort of thing. Yeah, so I mean, arguably, like, descriptions are something that you should do. I've kind of fallen out of favour with it, almost, or I don't bother I remember the times when it used to be the first thing everyone did, though. You go to a convention, watch your character, like, well, he's about 6 foot, he's got a green cloak, and he's got on, do like, just do that basic kind of primary colour kind of introduction. And we've kind of, I think we've kind of moved away from it for some reason. I'm not sure why. I think possibly because it was just that, a literal description of features and exact height and weight, which aren't particularly helpful. But if you've got a fancy hat with a huge ostrich feather on, I want to know about it, because that's going to be part of your character, definitely. What was I going to say before? Yeah, and possibly, I think you've sort of, like, you've been hinting at this all the time, but, like, don't be overly ambitious, which sort of ties into that backstory thing we were talking about. It's like, you don't have to have too much.
Mm.
You don't have to have 7 different personality quirks and a change of outfits every time you go to a new scene or something. There was an interview with George R.R. Martin about Game of Thrones, and there's someone said, like, oh, which character would you want to be if you were, you know, one of the characters from the Song of Ice and Fire or whatever? And he said, oh, Tyrion, because, you know, he's so witty and this, that, and the other. And he went, oh, well, actually, I suppose I am Tyrion, because I wrote those lines. And then he reflected again and went, but actually, I wrote those lines over many weeks, and what I want to be able to do is just say them. I want to be Tyrion in real time rather than over months.
Yeah.
So there's, I guess, have some ambition, but be aware of overreaching or, like, you know, thinking of too many things, as you've said before, like, you know, pick something quite simple, really, and just play to that and play around with it a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. I've sat down with people before who've, and I mean, it doesn't age very well, this kind of stuff, but I've sat down with game systems that have suggested you can have multiple personality disorder. And that's something that you can have on your character sheet, you know? And it's, like I say, it doesn't age well. And I'd have to throw an X card on the table if I saw that now, to be honest.
Mm.
But, you know, I would, my big caveat for this, and Call of Cthulhu, you need to watch yourself on this one, is playing up mental illnesses as personality. That's a bit, that's not on.
Not right.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in the same way as I don't, you know, you could go for tropes, you could go for archetypes, but I think you do need to be a little bit sensitive. In fact, you need to be a lot of bit sensitive to just being crass. So I don't think this would ever happen now. But the idea of, like, you know, what would Jim Davidson do if he was generating a character from a B&B character? Don't be that person.
Don't do that.
And but you see it. You see it. You still see it. It's like, don't do that. That's not a personality. That's your various isms surfacing there.
Yeah.
So, and guide these people and educate them, perhaps, rather than just berate them and kick them out of your group, because it might just be that they're a bit, you know, don't really have a clue as to what works best in a social setting.
There are a lot of socially open people who don't get out very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, one of the characters from Typeface Harvey that I've mentioned previously is Foulmouth Sam, who in my head, he's always going about, like, poxy pirates or scurvy sea dogs or something like that. But I did have a player who was straight out of the gate dropping F and C bombs at everybody.
Oof.
And I had to kind of go, whoa, there, Tiger. Like, you can play a character how you want, but it's quite difficult for everybody around the table to understand whether that's you or whether that's your character. And also, I did say this was a PG-13 game, so can we, like, modulate what we're saying a little bit more?
Oh, I love that. You play your character how you want, but you can't.
But but that's the... I'm saying it's the British way of saying you can. But yeah. You definitely can't do that.
Yeah, I'm asking you to desist.
And I can move to not politely asking if you're going to carry on, but unfortunately, you got the message, so that was all right.
Yeah. So, yeah. This is the danger of my approach of, like, broad brush stuff, is that sometimes you use shorthand, but then you realise that, you know, cultural appropriation is a thing, and sexism is a thing, and all of the other isms are a thing, and you know, don't be that person, but you can still have good characters with very simple kind of launch points that you don't have to stay at that launch point. We've mentioned this a few times, haven't we? Your character's got to grow, so you've got to play it, and your first idea might not be the one that you want to be in 6 sessions' time. Session zeros are great for getting things started, but they don't have to be carved in stone. It's okay to change characters. In fact, I think you have to change your character. I think when George R. R. Martin talks about Tyrion, I guess if I was being a dick, I'd say, well, which version of Tyrion? Early Tyrion? Late Tyrion? Mid Tyrion?
Yeah.
Tyrion when he was the Hand? You know, these are all different characters. It's that change that really makes it happen. And that change can't just come from the scenario and the setting provided by the GM. The change has to come from the players as well. What are they doing? How are they developing? Not even necessarily growing, but they've got to change. And that doesn't happen unless you've got a drive, or another word for drive. I've increasingly started having to put post-it notes on character sheets that don't have drives for characters, and making sure that I write a drive on there.
Mm.
Good games do give you something to want, something to desire as a character, some place you want to be or some person you want to be. And for those games that don't, I suggest you plaster one on there quite quickly, because the basic question you're going to get asked in RPGs is, what do you do? And if you haven't got a default, then you're going to be scrambling very often. Yeah. And if you ever ask Peter Parker what he wants to do, or Tony Stark what he wants to do, or Natasha Romanoff, you'll get an answer. And if your PC needs to have that, I think.
Yes.
It's not just who you are, but every character you've mentioned today, Gaz, has got something there, an agenda as well, something they want. Mm.
If you're in a place and you haven't got one, like, bring one in yourself. Like, yeah. Decide for yourself what your drive is, for sure. Like, I had a slightly frustrating game of Barbarians at one of the conventions I went to, and thankfully our good friend Jules was there, and he took the bull by the horns and followed the obvious road signs that were there to go and do the thing. But there's this, the Bavarians of Lemuria were sweeping down, and they had to be stopped. And every single character had a different reason why they would want to go and sort this out or see the king.
Mm.
They're like, he's killed your brother, he's stolen your favourite animal, he's done this, he's done that. And five players weren't picking any of that up. And it's like, well, I've only given you one thing to do on the back of your character sheet, and it's all pointing in the same direction. And the what do you do question was getting a lot of cow eyes back the other direction, where people going, oh, I don't know, what should we do? Should we go here? I don't know. It's like, I've literally got one thing on the character sheet, which was a drive supposed to drive you all in the same direction. But as I say, thankfully Jules picked it up and went, I think we should go here, shouldn't we? And then all of a sudden we went, oh, do you know what? I want to go there as well. It's like, Jesus Christ, come on, guys. But yes, even if I haven't provided, or the GM hasn't provided some kind of drive for you, think of your own. You know, why do you go down dungeons grubbing for gold when you could be a turnip farmer or something else? You know, like, what's getting you out of the house in the morning?
Yeah, yeah, and it sounds so obvious, doesn't it? And I think that if we grew up with D&D as our entry ramp into the hobby, it was kind of served up for you. The idea of experience points, which is a meta currency, but given that you got experience points for gold, it wasn't hard to figure out that, oh, well, I want gold then, don't I? That's what I do. And do you know what? We've lost something a bit over the years as well, where we get a bit too sophisticated with stuff. There's nothing wrong with having a character whose motivation is money. It happens in the real world often enough.
Mm.
That's a perfectly good drive. You know, I just want to be the richest person ever. I'm playing in a Dungeons & Drakenheim game at the moment where I've been really obvious about what I want. There's all kinds of factions we've got to deal with, and one of them's the Bandit Queen. Well, I want to be the Bandit Queen, thank you very much. So I want to join her organisation, then I want to go up through the ranks, and eventually I want to stab her in the back and I want to run this thing, and I'm going to tell her that next time I see her. I want all the money and I want all the power. And that doesn't stop me, you know, going and fighting rats in sewers in early games and dealing with angry ogres in taverns and all the other things that we're going to do in the game. That's all fine. But I've got that written in pen on my character. So the minute there's downtime, or if I could squeeze it into a scene, or if I could talk about it, or if anyone says to me, if the GM goes, guys, what do you want to do next week? I've got an answer.
Mm.
And it's an obvious one. And it's so easy, because it's, as a GM, if I've got players who can tell me what their drives are, then they're writing my scenarios for me. So, you know, they're getting what they want, I'm getting what they want, they're getting what they want, everyone's getting what they want.
This,
you know, a car for you, a car for you, you got a car. This is all good. So, yeah. You know, if you could come up, and you must come up with a drive for your character, and it could get vetoed and session zeroed and all of those things, and hammered out and even changed, because a drive can change just as easily, because once you've got what you want, what are you going to do next? But it's important to have one, because otherwise you haven't got any forward momentum with your rather excellent little precious fragile character has got to have somewhere to go.
Yes. No, I agree. Disappointing in a way. Well, the campaign was good, but a disappointing element of it. We played Shadow of the Demon Lord, and for people who don't know, basically you go up a level every session. So the idea is you play 11 sessions, because Rob Schroll turns everything up to 11, and then you're done. So your characters have to grow there and change, and quite quickly, because you've only got 11 sessions, and then you're done. So you've got to show some growth. And for most of us, we did. We changed or became... Because you become, like, I don't know, you start off as a blacksmith's apprentice and you end up as a high chief executioner or something. So you've got to kind of go with the flow. But one of the characters was just... Or one of the players played the character, still just this, like, wide-eyed wizard's apprentice. And by session 10, it's like, but you can teleport to Jupiter now. Like, can we... Like, I don't think he's quite as wide-eyed.
Yeah.
I don't know why you want to, but you can if you want. So there's a bit of that. So yeah, show growth, develop, and you might not know what that path is. You might not know where your endpoint is, but you can change along the way. We're not saying like set up a drive and that's you for 30 sessions of a campaign. You have to stick with the same personality, but start somewhere. I guess a good example of, like, having that driver and it coming up is John Blackthorne in Shogun. So that's a James Clavell novel, an 80s miniseries with Richard Chamberlain, and it's now a new blockbuster FX series, which I don't like, but that'll be a whole different podcast. Because they're messing with...
TLDR.
Yeah.
I did not like.
I mean, surely, if you don't know any of the source material, then you'll probably get a lot out of it. That's my impression from what other people have spoken to, but it messes with the story too much to no good end for me, and the characters as well. But John Blackthorne is based on a real British privateer called William Adams, I think it was. He was a British pilot of a Dutch ship and ended up in the Japans, as they called them. And ended up being made a samurai in Hatamoto and did lots of stuff for the Tokugawa clan. Anyway, throughout the story, all he's trying to do all the time is get his ship and his guns and his crew back. And Clavell's novels are very good because they give you an insight into Asian culture and show a lot of the strengths and hearts as well. So, you know, by halfway through the book, you're going, you've just got a much better life now. Why are you still going on about, like, getting home and doing this and doing that? Like, why aren't you happy with, like, your house you've got and your concubine and your status and all these people around you? And, like, your life's just so much better. But it's good from a character point of view because constantly reminded that he wants to get his guns again and get his ship. And he's still got this ambition to get back to England and then come back with a fleet of ships. And they're going to push the Jesuits out and, you know, England's going to have this place here and he's going to have fabulous wealth and the Queen's going to reward him and it's going to be amazing. He's going to be this big hero. Although he's doomed to never leave Japan. It's just a good, really good example of that sort of thing you're talking about, of just having the thing, that drive. That's the drive that he still keeps coming back to. Even if he's in social situations where you think, don't mention the guns again, will you? you're really going to annoy people. And he's like, and can I have this as well? It's like, ah, oh, mate, what have you done? But that bit of, like, you not wanting to do something but know he's going to say it anyway is the sort of thing that's great for a character as well and great in a role-playing game where you know the guy with the big mouth, just when you think you've negotiated with a dark elf criminal underworld, a good solution is going to say something. And we have to caveat again and say, don't be a dick about it. Like, if you've got a big mouth, do it in amusing ways that enhances the story. If everything seems in a good place, don't just blurt something out for the sake of, oh, I have to because my character would. That's probably our final and biggest caveat, isn't it? Like, that's the so many crimes in roleplay I've seen over the years are due to people going, it's what my character would do, and using that as a shield.
Well, yeah, when I see that happen, I think, well, if only you acted the way your character would do. Because it's usually false. That's not what your character would do at all. You haven't got a character. That's what you would do, you dickhead. I think it was really prescient. It's a bit of a Westworld, back when everyone was starting to get streaming and stuff, you know, the modern remake Westworld. It was so prescient that as soon as people start to be able to do whatever they want, the things that they decided to do were pretty gross.
Yeah.
and that entire show was like, this is what my character would do.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
How about doing what your character should do?
Right.
Different modal verb, completely different outcome.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard to keep a character going. Honestly, it is hard to keep a character going. It's after any sort of lengthy time with a character, and by lengthy these days, I'm going like beyond six sessions. That's lengthy. Characters do tend to sort of like, you can rub the edges off them. They become a bit sort of smoothed out and you just default to getting a little bit lazy with your character and it just becomes more like you with a skin on, you know? Mm-hmm. Our good friend Jules is basically playing Jules in session six of any game and I'm playing me in session six of any game. It's just, I have all these great starts. So yeah, you want to keep it fresh, and I think a session zero should happen every six sessions. There should always be a 6.1 and a 12.1 and then an 18.1, where you just
get
to have a little bit of refresh. And I've done that before. We played Forbidden Lands for a while. Well, about six sessions actually, and we'd got to a point where we're about to go and enter a new settlement, and we'd opened up a new hex on our map, and it was time to pause and reflect on what we'd done so far. And our lovely GM said, you know, what have you enjoyed so far? What have you not enjoyed? What do you want more of, less of, etc.? And we all kind of looked at each other and thought, I don't really know what we're doing here. Well, the first six sessions have been fun, just messing around and finding out and poking things and so on. But we didn't really have a goal. We didn't really have an agenda apart from just exploration, which was fine for what it was. But we couldn't really get excited about what was going to happen next because we were just bimbling about.
Yeah.
And we actually decided to end the game at that point. And not in a sad way, not in a kind of like, oh, that was rubbish, because it wasn't rubbish. We had a lot of fun. It was good times. And we may go back to it. We probably won't. But we just realised that actually our personalities, our PCs, just didn't have enough heft to them to merit us wanting to take them further.
Hmm.
It wasn't really the setting or the world, and it was a little bit of the system. We just all looked at each other and went, that's been okay. It's not a one-shot. We'll do something different. And we play very different characters in our next game.
Yeah.
That happens. It's all right.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, I'll mention again, I mention it a lot, and I've been through this several times, so apologies to loyal listeners. But if you may be new or not heard, but Pendragon is another good game you should look at. There's a new edition of it coming out, thanks to our friends at Chaosium for dropping me a couple of PDFs so I could get a good look at it. And the good thing about it is that you have a set of personality traits and passions which should guide your character. And the setting itself has got, you are knightly, so you're supposed to be doing things that a good knight would do. And there's a set of virtues on the left-hand side of the sheet which tell you all the things you should do. So if you're not sure what you should do in that setting, well, you should be trusting and generous and all the other things that are on that side of the character sheet. And they've got sympathetic other sides, so opposite trusting, there's suspicious, and opposite valorous, there's cowardly, etc. And they're always in balance, so they add up to 20 each. So it's good from both aspects in terms of you can look at your character sheet and go, well, I've got 16 in trusting, so I'm more likely just to trust someone, then you can go with it. And that is a perfectly acceptable way of going there. Well, that's what my character would do, because that's part of the game. And if you want to not be trusting, well, you're going against your nature. It's going to be hard for you to do that. You've only got a 4 in 20 chance of doing it, really. But the other side is that you get ticks and checks on each of the sides. So as you do more things, if you are more suspicious, the chances are your suspicious will go up and your trusting will come down. So the character reflects how you play the character as well as giving you guidance in the first place. So that's, you know, take a look at that if you haven't already to give yourselves an idea of how you might do personalities. And it's just a shame that RuneQuest didn't go with that in the end, because it was going to be that similar system, and then each culture or whatever would have a different set of priorities or a different set of numbers on their sheet.
This is old tech as well, isn't it? Like first Pendragon, 80s?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's been around a long time, because it was the next thing after 9-point alignment, really, wasn't it? It was the first game to do it, isn't it? Because I've been coasting on Chaotic Good for many decades.
Chaotic interesting. Cool. Well, I do note that we're out of time. We could probably talk more, and I've got a whole list full of other inspirations. But at home in listener land, let us know yours. Where do you get your ideas from? What are cool characters that you thought of? Can you think of any memorable characters from games you played in? Yours or someone else's? Do let us know. Put them in the comments, because you know we love to hear from you and it helps the channel out.
Take friends. Give us a like. Give us a bit of patronage like the other magnificent people who continue to support these ramblings. We love you and literally could not do without you. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, patrons. You'll note that you got an early blog this time. I've managed to put one out. So other little bits and pieces like that will come out over time as well to support you. And thank you for helping us. Until next time, dear listeners and patrons, this has been The Smart Party. Goodbye.
Bye.